It's 12:06 and time for Outer Space's Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. Good afternoon. I'm Sarah D'Elia sitting in for Sean Beter this afternoon, and I'm joined by our gardening guru, Doug Hackbarth. Welcome, Doug.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm excited because today, first, I want to give out our numbers if you'd like, if you have a gardening or plant question, 260-452-1185. You can always post questions and comments on our Facebook page or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. But we're going to start off by talking about preparations folks need to start taking for their plant safety and health as the temperatures start to drop.
Yeah, you know, we've dropped down into 38, 39 degree range now, and that is just borderline frost. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who have plants out, like their house plants, Schiffalera plants, the umbrella tree. They have weeping figs out. And, of course, I see Boston ferns out usually till December. Apparently, they don't want to keep them. But the thing about leaf droppage and shock, you hear these terms, especially shock. Well, the plant goes into shock when I bring it back into the house. Well, that's your fault because you wait too long. Mm. Anytime the temperatures start to drop, especially even into just the low to mid 40s, mm-hmm. your plant is going to start to harden off, just like we do with tomatoes in the springtime. We want them to harden off so they can tolerate that kind of stuff. And then the weather gets better. Mm-hmm. For our house plants, they start to harden off, and the weather doesn't get better. It gets worse. And so when these plants harden off, and it's the cold weather that's doing it, when you take them into the house, you have shock. Mm. And what that means is a lot of your leaves will fall off. And the longer you wait to bring them in, the more leaves that will fall off. I've always recommended the first part of September, if you have house plants that you want the leaves to stay on, take them in the first part of September, even if it's warm out, mm-hmm. because you don't want those cold nights starting to hit them. And we've had 2 to 3 weeks. You know, Labor Day came and it was nice, mm-hmm. but it was just a couple days later that this coolness started to happen. Yeah, yeah. And sometimes you might go a week or two after Labor Day. Mm-hmm. Not this year.
Yeah. And we have a caller on great. Line one. Jim, are you there?
Yep.
Welcome to Outer Space's Midday Matters. What's your question?
I have a quick question about blueberries. First of all, what are the recommended varieties for this area for early, mid-season, and late? And then if I plant just one of each, is that enough for cross-pollination?
It is enough. And, you know, I wish I could tell you the variety names. It's so funny because I just ordered them yesterday for next year, and I don't remember what the varieties were. I'm sorry. You know, like when you talk grapes, there's Himrod and Concord and Niagara. I got those varieties. Mm-hmm. But the blueberries, I can't remember the names of the varieties. But generally, if you buy from a reputable nursery, they will only sell varieties that are good in your neighborhood. Sometimes if you buy from, say, the box stores, you're not really sure if those are for your area or not. They're supposed to be, I think they try to get them that way, but sometimes they make mistakes because remember, you take a place that's gigantic. I won't mention names, but you take a big box store who buys for the entire country. They place their orders. Sometimes varieties that might work well in Tennessee or Kentucky, Southern Kentucky, and not work so well here, might accidentally get shipped up this way. Of course, you know, most of the time these things are grown from here to Michigan. So mm-hmm. I would think people in Florida wouldn't even mess with blueberries and right. that. But I'm sorry I don't remember the name varieties that I ordered. But just a couple plants would do it, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Two different varieties in different seasons.
That would be good, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks so much,
you bet.
Jim.
Yeah, and so no callers. Mm-hmm. So back to that topic about right. leaf droppage. Mm-hmm. Now that sometimes there's plants that I don't mind if the leaves fall off, and this will sound kind of funny to you, but you know the tropical mandevilla vines that people have going up their trellises, or the hibiscus, the annual tropical hibiscus shrub or tree, mm-hmm. I don't care if the leaves fall off of those. In fact, I want them to fall off. So in this case, leave those plants outside as long as possible. You know, even a light freeze probably wouldn't hurt it, a light freeze. But a hard frost would be, I mean, a light frost wouldn't hurt it, but a light, a heavy frost might be damaging to the plant. But you can leave those outside because when you bring them in, I want the leaves off. The leaves is where all the white fly eggs have been laid that haven't come to life, mm-hmm. mainly because of the cool nights. They just sort of slowed down their hatching process. And so eventually you bring the plant into the house, those eggs are going to take off again. And before you know it, 4, 5, 6 weeks later, you've got a crop of white fly flying around in your home. So I just assume, here's what you do with hibiscus and mandevilles. Cut them way back. With the mandevillas, I like to say cut them back to the original trellis that was on them when you bought it. Hmm. Hopefully you put it on a bigger trellis, but I never take the old trellis off. So cut it back to that size. Mm-hmm. And then any remaining leaves, take them off. And then spray the stems with soapy water, or you can use a dormant oil spray. But with the soapy water, after you spray it, you can take the bucket of soapy water and pour it right down through the pot. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have plants that are in the ground and they need to go to pots, we'll get that job done right away so that they can get established while they're still outside and you can be sloppy with the watering and all that stuff and get a root system going again. But eventually, dump the soapy water through the pot before you take it in. Mm-hmm. And that gets any insects that are living in the soil to come out. Hmm. It's a great method.
Yeah.
Lemon Scented Joy has always been the preferred brand. However, you can use any lemon scented soap. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of generic types. That works great. And the same with that's the mandevilla. And the same with the hibiscus. If it's a tree, trim it back to a smaller ball at the top. Cut off any branches that are too low that shouldn't really be there because you want to have a nice ball shape at the top. And then any remaining leaves, pick them off. Mm-hmm. Spray the stem, the trunk with soapy water or dormant oil, but then take the soapy water and pour it through the pot mm-hmm. to get rid of things like pill bugs and worms and things like that. That's what you want to do.
Great. And we have a caller online. Sherry is on line one. Sherry, welcome to Outer Space's Midday Matters.
Thank you.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I'm wondering, I have, my question is about putting new shrubs and bushes in the ground in the fall.
Yeah.
I have a sky pencil Japanese holly. Mm-hmm. It's about 7 feet tall. And I'm just wondering if there's any preparations or anything I should be concerned about. I do know that this bush needs to be sheltered. It can't be out in the open wind. Mm-hmm. It doesn't like that, but anything else, I'd love to have some pointers on.
Well, yes, and you're right about that. This is a plant that you shouldn't put out in the middle of your yard, like maybe way over in the corner you're doing a little landscaping. This wouldn't be a good place for that. It should be up somewhat close to the house.
Yeah,
The north or northeast side
okay.
is the preferred side. Not that we're trying for light problems. What we're trying to do is protect it during the winter months. That's always
right.
That's always the factor is what's going to happen in the wintertime. Because the west side is sunny and windy. As human beings, we like sunny.
Right.
But plants don't. They want to get frozen and stay that way. And so the south or west side is the side that the plants will defrost on a warm 5 days in winter. And we don't want them to defrost. So the north or northeast side is preferred, close to the house where a lot of heat escapes. Hopefully that's not your problem, heat escaping, but for most places, especially through windows and things like that. But here's the real kick to to keeping this thing alive. Make sure that before winter gets here that this plant is not bone dry. Make
okay.
sure you water it even if it's in November.
Okay.
Water it, and I'm not saying water on a regular basis. Just make sure it doesn't go into winter dry, or you'll
okay.
lose the plant.
Wonderful.
Okay, yeah, I will make one more quick comment on all of your shrubbery that's outside that the wind could dry up. This is where a product called Wiltproof comes in handy. During the fall season, like late October or early November, you spray these plants, evergreens, pine trees, you know, those types of things, spruces, and your holly, spray it with Wiltproof, And what that does, wilt proof, it locks the moisture into your plant even though the wind's blowing. It keeps it from being damaged. Wilt proof.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You bet.
All right. Thank you, Sherry. And we have Megan online too. Megan, welcome to Midday Matters.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. So I'm kind of new to gardening, and I have a Russian sage plant in my yard.
Big and wild.
I don't know if I need to be cutting this back or... It's kind of insane. It's huge.
They're big, wild, and crazy plants. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm not really sure what to do with it
now. You can cut that Russian sage back anytime you like.
Okay.
Throughout the growing season. And I had done a little gardening tour yesterday, and there was a lot of Russian sage in their garden. It was a big garden. So if you have a giant garden, then giant plants are okay. But I know that within the next few weeks, those Russian sages will be cut back, as well as many other plants in the garden. The hostas should be cut back. If you don't cut things like hostas back, what's going to happen is after we get hard freezes, all the foliage that's left on there will just kind of turn to mush and look horrible in your garden. So it's so much better to cut it off while it's, you know, alive and get rid of that foliage so that it doesn't turn to mush and look horrible in your... It just makes the garden look dead. Mm. And if it's not there, it doesn't look bad. So, but yeah, you can cut that Russian sage back anytime you want to. You can do it now. You can wait several weeks. But I would probably cut it back just because it gets too big.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Right.
Thank you, Megan. And we are about to take a break, but if you have any questions or comments for Doug, we're talking about plants and gardening, and we're here to answer any of those questions you might have. Give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
Hi, I'm Julia Meekin. What's on this week's Meet the Music? Something for everyone. Jeannie Hoffman's saxophone experience, David Toteron's trio, and the Celtic flair of El the Remnant. That's Thursday night from 7 to 9 here at 89.1 FM or listen online at nipr.fm. A two-hour serving of homegrown delights here on Meet the Music.
The battle for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin.
When they cut me, it comes out cardinal red and a little bit of cheese, and that's Tommy Thompson.
The four-term former governor is playing catch-up to surging Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin.
I believe I'm in the finest tradition of Wisconsin progressives.
Tammy versus Tommy, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Travel Leaders, proud supporter of public broadcasting, featuring Alaskan cruises and European holidays. Travel Leaders, making vacations monumental, online at travelbetterindiana.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold & Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Are your investments tax-wise? More information at Reinbold & Anderson on NIPR's homepage at www.nipr.fm.
Welcome back to Outer Space's Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:21. I'm Sarah D'Elia, sitting in for Sean Beter this afternoon, and we have our gardening guru, Doug Hackbarth, along. And we're answering your plant and garden questions, and we already have two callers on the line. We have Lynn on line one. Lynn, welcome to Midday Matters.
Hi.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I actually have two questions.
Okay.
The first one has to do with, it's a hydrangea, and I'm not sure what kind. It's not really a snowball, but it has, like, big white puffy flowers, and I've actually planted it when I planted it too close to a evergreen in front of my house.
Mm.
And I want to move it.
Sure.
And I was thinking if I cut it way back and try and move it here in the next couple of days or weeks, or whatever.
That sounds good.
That
sounds good to me. It could be Annabellum. Is it a big?
It's an Annabella.
Annabella, yeah. And is it a? It gets pretty large then, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing really well. They've got two of them up there, and they're just really pretty. But mm-hmm. it's just mm-hmm. I made the mistake of planting one.
Yeah, they get surprisingly large.
Yeah, they're very pretty.
Beautiful plants. You can cut those blossoms off at any stage. You know, when they're white, that's one thing. When they turn the brownish color, we use them for dried, you know, like in wreaths and things like that. At any stage, they're nice. For weddings, they like them white, and for dried arrangements, they like them more in the brown colors.
Yeah, I could see that. They'd be really pretty in wreaths. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I should cut it way back then, and
cut it back because you can see how vigorously it grows.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be in a hurry to cut it back, but since you want to move it, you might as well cut it back and move it at the same time.
Okay.
And just do it whenever you want.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My other question is, I'm not sure, I'm trying to remember, it's a Vigalia, and I think it's Wine and Roses. Does that sound right?
Yeah, Vigalia.
Huh?
It's a Vigalia.
Vigilia.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wine and Roses. Yeah. It's got the reddish, purplish reddish leaves and the beautiful, pink flowers?
Yes. It's very pretty. It didn't do as well this year. And
I didn't think any of them did as well this year. I don't know if the heat was hard on them. That's probably what it was. We have one established at the building that gets gigantic and. Mm-hmm. I need to do it myself, I guess. It needs to be cut way back because this thing is huge. It did get cut back pretty far once about 3-4 years ago, but it needs it again.
Okay, that was my question.
Yeah.
I was thinking about cutting it back also, and I didn't know if it was a wise thing to do, but it must be.
Well, that's a plant that's easy to fool because I say to people, we usually say when perennials bloom, that after they bloom, that's when you cut them. With Vigilias, you just cut them whenever you want to.
Oh, okay.
Although I'd like to see them bloom at least once before you cut them. But generally, after you cut them, they will grow back.
Okay.
And they'll bloom again. And when I say they're easy to fool, every time it gets cool, they think it's spring, and so they want to bloom again. And they're quick thinkers that way. It's like, oh, it's spring, I better bloom. And so that's what happens.
Okay. It's been in the ground probably 3 or 4 years, so it's probably about time to cut it back.
I would say so, yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. You've been a big help.
You bet.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And we have Judy online, too. Judy, welcome to Midday Matters.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, Doug. I have a question about Cleone seeds. I have quite a large area of them, and I thought I would try. I've never done this before. To actually take the seeds and keep them and plant the seeds rather than going out and buying plants.
Absolutely. And they're hard to find, aren't they, when you go out to buy them?
They are hard to find. And I have some particularly pretty colors that I want to keep. And the purple is really hard to find.
Right. Pink, purple, and white.
Those are the colors I have.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I, I've never, I can see where the seed pods are. Do I just keep them in an envelope? Do I keep them in the refrigerator? Do I take them now?
Yes to all of those questions. I would probably get a grocery sack and then cut some flowers off and stick them, stick the stem and the flower in the grocery sack and just shake it and bang it around in the sack.
Oh,
the
good.
Seeds, the seeds will fall off in the bag. Then you can reduce that down to a smaller bag, like a popcorn size bag, like onion sets come into.
Okay.
And then you can roll that up, mark it Cleome. Some people pronounce it Cleome, and it's also known as spider plant, but not to be confused with the hanging basket spider plant. And then just keep them in the refrigerator. They shouldn't be frozen, although if they fall on the ground, they'll get frozen through the wintertime, and they come back. We have a beautiful Cleome up in the front of the flower shop that we did not plant. is just gorgeous. People are seeing it bloom, and they say, hey, where are those? Well, and then we didn't have them to sell this year.
Oh, and so
I've already gotten with my salesman. I said, hey, we didn't have Cleome this year to sell. Why is that? You know, we'd had it in years past, and I forgot about it. And it's such a rare thing for the average consumer that they don't come in and ask for it much. We might have had one or two people ask this year. But it's a gorgeous thing. Grows, what is it? Grow four feet?
Probably four feet at least.
Yeah, 4 feet tall and get beautiful pink flowers. But like you said, purple and white. Pardon me?
I think they're gorgeous. So yeah. I had a hard time finding them this year.
And they're tall and you don't have to stake them. They're tough.
You don't have to stake them.
Right.
You know, like cosmos and so many of the other taller plants.
Right.
One area of my garden, I really like tall plants.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I have another question about, we lost, unfortunately, several spruce trees during the bad storm. And we're going to replant. We had, where we're going to replant, we had the people grind down, down, and make huge hole and refill it. But I want to know what kind of a tree. I wanted to, evergreen, but I understand spruces are not indigenous to this part of Indiana, and that's why so many of them got, it was a blue, there were two of them blue spruces. Why they got knocked out. Now my juniper, which is these spruces were like, I kid you not, 60 foot tall.
Isn't that amazing?
One got snapped in half and the other got snapped closer to the base.
Well, see, that's what I was going to ask you, if the tops got knocked off. Because that particular storm that we had on June 29th, believe me, I know the storm, it blew the roof off of our building. That particular roof, I forget the word that it's called, my wife.
Derosier.
What is it?
It was a derosier.
Derosier, or derosier, okay. Yes, I always forget that. My wife remembers it. Anyway, unlike a tornado that spins, this is a straight line, hard cutting wind. And a lot of people's pine trees and spruces, the tops were snapped off.
One got snapped in the middle and the other got snapped. Not all, I'd say two-thirds of the way down.
Yeah.
But we lost huge, we have really old trees, and we lost huge limbs off of massive old oaks. But we want to replant, and I don't want to put, I think they're absolutely gorgeous, and we still have one magnificent one left. But I don't want to put another one in because I've been told they're not a good tree. And I know I've also read in the paper, you know, our maple got hit really hard too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very mature maple. That maples aren't good either. But I want an evergreen for this particular spot. What would you recommend?
I would recommend you go back to what you had. I don't care what they tell you. It's a great tree. The blue spruces, and there's also other soft pines or firs. There's a lot of nice trees. I guess the best thing is go to a nursery that sells trees. That's not me. I sell some, but go to one that's got a good selection.
We want a tall tree.
And find one. Find one that looks good to you. And when you say, hey, I like that one, then ask the question while you're there, how tall does this get? Most of these things can get pretty tall. They grow faster than you think.
Well, that's good because my husband and I are not really elderly, but we're not young.
Yeah, but I would do that.
Years to enjoy it.
Okay, and not worry whether it's native to this country or this area, because really not much of any of them are. They're native to woods and rockier places.
Okay,
so,
well, would you be planting it now then? Is that okay to plant?
Yeah, if you can find the one you want, this is a perfect time to plant.
Yeah,
you know,
we will have them plant it. We're not going to try it.
Yeah.
We want like a 12-foot at least.
This is a great time to do it. You can wait longer, but I would rather see you do it sooner than later.
Well, we were hoping to do it here in the next couple weeks. Now, can you plug any nurseries that sell really tall trees? These were all here, so we haven't had to buy.
We did
buy some smaller trees from Neuhauser.
Yes.
Of course, they're out of business.
Yes,
now.
That's sad, isn't it?
But it is sad. It's very sad. I have lots of stuff from them. But,
sure. No, I mean, really...
They never would have had a tree tall enough anyway.
Yeah, I can think of a place, but I don't think I should really announce it on the radio. It wouldn't be fair to others, but
okay.
There's places out there. Let me tell you this, too. I drive to Roanoke once in a while, and I see a place. And also, when I go to the Cracker Barrel down Ardmore and then Washington Center Road, there's another place with a lot of trees, lots of trees. And so
Washington Center and
Ardmore to Washington Center, you turn right and you head for Cracker Barrel. See, I'll mention Cracker Barrel. But there's a place there that sells a lot of trees. And so you might think about those places.
All right.
Well, and then I'm from Broadview, you know. Broadview Nursery on Tonkle Road. There's another place that sells a lot of trees. So that's my nephew's place.
I do know that, but you don't have any. You normally have 12, 15 footers, do you?
Oh, I don't own that company. That's my nephew's company. So
okay.
I don't know what he has, honest to goodness. It's so far away from me, I hardly ever get there. But there's another place you can think about.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Sure. You have a great day.
I especially like the idea about putting them in the bag and shaking them. That's a great idea.
Oh, yeah. That's the way to do it. That's how you catch your seeds. Mm-hmm. You bet.
I'm going to try it.
So. Thank you.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. And we have David. David, welcome to Outer Space's Midday Matters.
Hi, David.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've also got some questions about trees. We had to take out 6 ash trees recently.
Mm-hmm.
These were approximately 20 years old, just getting to be substantial. So we're going to replant. And we do want to replant with native species. And so several of the trees were out in a location where I think it was appropriate. A couple were too close to the house, so I don't think the ash tree was the right tree there. We didn't plant them there.
Yeah.
So in the areas where we have a lot of space, we want to put in oak trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so from the standpoint of, there's an old joke I've heard that the best time to plant an oak tree is 25 years ago. what oak tree in this area will grow the fastest?
Oh, there's so many kinds. You know, there's the pin oak and just so many different varieties of oaks. But it's a matter of going to a place and seeing the oak trees and figuring out which one best suits your taste and having it done that way. I really don't have any names for you.
Okay. Then a follow-up question on that is, I listened to a podcast by a guy named Felder Rushing. It's called The Gestalt Gardener, and he's quite a character. It's an interesting podcast. He's actually down south, but he always says that if you want a big tree fast, plant a small tree. He says sometimes if you get a large tree, they're going to have to trim the roots back to a point that the tree is going to overburden its root system and it's not going to grow very fast.
That's probably good advice. You know, it's the same way with tomato plants. You know, if you buy small tomato plants, if you plant a small tomato plant next to a giant tomato plant and plant them both at the same time, that little one will catch up to it.
Yeah, it's an experiment on a shorter time scale.
And be healthier.
Yeah, if you had any advice about kind of what the optimum size tree is. I don't want to buy a dormant, rootstock mail order and put it in and wait 5 years for something.
Well, they usually sell trees by the diameter of the trunk, so maybe inch and a half to 2 inches, slightly bigger, but that would be ideal, and you get it planted. It doesn't have to be all that tall. I think a lot of times they are. That particular type of tree usually comes about 8 to 12 foot, but that would be about optimal.
Okay, 1.5 to 2 inches.
Yeah.
And then my other question was, a couple of the ash trees were really too close to the house. They didn't have enough room to grow. So we did have those areas. The landscape doesn't look right without something there. So we did have the deep grind. So we want to replant in the same area. But we don't want to plant a very substantial tree there. So is there any kind of narrow or mid-sized native species you could recommend for planting between 10 and 15 feet of a two-story house that wouldn't, in 20 years, just overpower the house?
Well,
branches hanging over the roof.
Yeah, there's a lot of specialty-type trees that have been grafted that you can keep smaller by pruning and trimming and cutting branches off of. Of course, I like redbuds. Dogwoods don't get overly large. And dogwoods can tolerate a lot of shade, too. If it, you said between houses, it might be some shade there a lot of the time. So that's an interesting tree. It blooms in the early spring.
The dogwoods, red buds, anything else come to mind?
Well, of course, the Japanese maples, I think, are too small for what you're asking for.
Yeah,
so.
And we really want to stick to native species.
Mm-hmm, right. So, no, I don't have any other suggestions for you, but I'm sure that when you go to a nursery, they'll have, you just give them that information, they'll have some suggestions for you. And then again, you know, you can throw out things and then you can't find them. So, like the last gal that called, fall's a great time to plant these things. It's just not always the best time to find what you want. Mm. So,
yeah,
spring, yeah. Everything's available. And in the fall, it's limited. But it is a great time to plant.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thanks for your input.
You bet. Good luck. I'll try to bring a list of those types of things next week with me. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank
you. All right. Thanks, David. And we have one more caller on the line before we're going to take a short break. We have Carol. Carol, welcome to Midday Matters.
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
Hi. I called in before. I had a during the storm, my fence fell on my tomato plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked the lady then if she thought they would grow. She wasn't sure. So I propped it up, and sure enough, I did get some very nice tomatoes out of it.
Good.
I just wanted to call and tell.
Oh, yeah.
It broke on the inside, but it didn't actually break the
main
outside of the...
Didn't break the main stalk or something.
No,
it must
it
have been over. And you can afford to lose branches. That's not a problem. It looks bad. And if you do snap branches off, it's always a good idea to get out there and clean up and cut those branches away, because clean cuts heal fast.
Yeah.
And broken branches that are just left to lay, they don't heal fast, but they try to. And they just create a great source. They're just like a magnet for insects and disease.
Yeah. I didn't cut anything off. I just propped it up.
Yeah.
And some of the leaves looked like they were dying. That's why I thought I was going to lose it. And
mm-hmm.
I did take the leaves off that looked like were dying. And
right.
Sure enough, I got tomatoes out of it.
Well, good. Glad to hear it.
Okay. And thank you for your program.
Oh, you bet.
I get a lot of information from you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Carol. Doug and I are going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more of Outer Space's Midday Matters here on WBOY in just a few moments. If you have any gardening questions or plant questions, give us a call, 260-452-1185. Post on our Facebook page or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm.
On the next Fresh Air, why is our high-speed internet slower and our bills higher than in many other countries? And why is it many Americans don't even have access yet? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston about his new book, The Fine Print. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon, I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. Organizers are urging people attending a Fort Wayne public appearance by Burmese democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi next Tuesday to arrive early because of the large crowd expected and security precautions. Organizers said Wednesday that at least 7,000 people have indicated they'll attend the program with the 1991 Nobel Peace Prize winner. Memorial Coliseum will have more than 10,000 seats available. They say people are coming from as far away as Toronto and Minneapolis. Some seats will be reserved, but most will be available on a first-come, first-served basis. Doors will open to the public at 7:30 a.m. for the program beginning at 9 o'clock. Suu Kyi is on a 17-day United States tour. New state estimates predict Indiana's Medicaid costs will increase between around $600 million and $2.6 billion over a 7-year period once the Affordable Care Act goes into effect. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, the actual costs depend on how the federal law is implemented.
The wide difference in potential cost calculated by Milliman Incorporated, the state's actuary, is based on whether the state decides to expand Medicaid. If the state doesn't expand the health care program, it will still see an increase of $612 million. If full expansion occurs, it would cost $2.6 billion. But Milliman consulting actuary Robert Damler says the $2.6 billion figure is based on full participation.
We don't believe that a full participation will occur, but it's more of an endpoint estimate. We are comfortable with our best estimate, which is the $2.1 billion estimate.
Healthcare consultant Seema Verma is leading Indiana's ACA implementation. She says the state hasn't made a decision on whether to expand Medicaid. She says that will be up to the next governor and legislature. And Verma says much of the uncertainty revolves around the Healthy Indiana Plan, a state-run healthcare program for uninsured Hoosiers. Indiana wants to use HIP for its Medicaid expansion, but the federal government has only granted a one-year extension to the program.
We don't know whether, you know, leaving aside the whole Medicaid expansion, whether they'll even let a HIP program than what we have today, whether they'll just even let that continue at our regular match rates.
The state plan requires enrollees to contribute to HIP. Verma says whether the federal government will allow that is one of the biggest points of contention. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And Fort Wayne's public school enrollment is projected to surpass Indianapolis to become the state's largest school district. Preliminary numbers show that Fort Wayne Community Schools has an enrollment of 30,622 students, or about 500 more than Indianapolis Public Schools' preliminary enrollment. Final numbers will not be confirmed until later this year. IPS has experienced a gradual decline in enrollment in recent years, allowing the Fort Wayne District to catch up. Indiana uses the enrollment numbers from districts' fall count day to calculate funding for those districts. The preliminary numbers submitted by every Indiana district must be reconciled by state education officials. Now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sarah DeLeon.
Welcome back to Outer Space's Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:43. I'm Sarah DeLeo, sitting in for Sean Beter this afternoon, and we're joined by our Thursday co-host, Doug Hackbarth.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us today.
I'm here.
We're taking your plant and gardening questions, and we have Randy on line one. Randy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got two questions.
Sure.
First is about tomato plants.
Mm-hmm.
I've planted tomatoes in the same year for several years now. In the last 2 years, get beautiful plants, nice, big, green tomatoes that never turn red.
Well, I've heard that happening before. Some things that, but you get tomatoes, they're just green.
Yeah. The plants are full of green tomatoes, but they never seem to ripen.
And they just won't ripen for you. Crazy. I do know that once in a while, and I'm not saying you did this, but sometimes people tend to pick leaves away from the tomatoes thinking that if the sun hits the tomato itself, it'll help it to turn red, and it doesn't help. It actually gives you green spots in your tomatoes, but you're not having that problem. You're not getting any red spots. That's what you want. Right. The other thing that I've recently researched was the fact that how to make a tomato plant produce more tomatoes is by stressing it between waterings. You want to stress the plant, then it thinks it's going to die, and it tends to produce more fruit. But
so maybe overwatering could have been a problem.
Yes, this is what I'm getting at, is possibly overwatering, and I don't know if you fertilize, but over-fertilizing also would help to produce a beautiful plant, and you said your plants were beautiful. So I suspect that maybe you do fertilize occasionally, but certainly keep up on the watering. But if you would let the plants stress more, perhaps that would help. As far as the fruit turning red, if there's any tricks to it other than after you pick them and you cover them with newspaper where they're dark, that makes them turn red in the house. But you you want them to turn red before you pick them, and I don't blame you.
Nice thing to have. Second question is, we have, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, but we have a koi pond, and it has a hardy lilies or whatever, not lilies, hardia.
The lilies.
The floating plants.
Right.
Or whatever they're called, yeah. And up in Columbia City this summer when I was talking to them, they asked, I've been cutting them off every year and dropping the pots down in the bottom of the water, but they asked me why I didn't plant them into the stones, and I said, well, I never thought about that. I guess my question is, I'd like to plant the hardy lilies into the stones, but is it too late in the year to do that?
No, it's too late for me to get in that water. It's probably cold, but but no, it's not too late to do that. You can certainly do it. And you don't have to take them out of the pot either. You can dig a hole and stick pot and all in it, and they'll root out through the holes in the pot. But you can take the pots off. If the root system is coming out so much that it's hard to get the pot off, then just bury pot and all.
Okay.
And you don't have to bury them until they're completely covered either, because they are completely covered by water.
That's true.
So just get them halfway down in there, as long as you don't see the pot.
Okay.
Because that's the eyesore.
Well, I think I'm going to get in the water this weekend, so I'm going to have to brave it through the cold water. So.
Yeah, lily pads, I guess, is about what you'd call them. Lily, yeah. Very good.
Thank you very much.
You bet. I'd like
right,
to
thank you.
Thank you so much. I'd like to say, too, Sarah, I was up in the Port Clinton area a few weeks back, and they had these ponds of lily pads like I've never seen before in my life, just acres and acres of them. And they were all blooming with those lotus pods.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize that lotus pods came from these lilies, but this was incredible. The acres of lotus pods that were coming out of these lily pads. Very interesting.
Yeah, that must have been beautiful.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was unreal. Yep.
260-452-1185 if you have a gardening question for Doug. We have just about 11 minutes left in today's show, so make sure you get your call in sooner than later. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. And I'm curious, Doug, about any more gardening tips you have for folks to protect their plants for the oncoming frost.
Well, of course, you can always cover the plants if you have a frost. Most of the plants that are outside, number one, if they're annuals, you're going to get rid of them anyway, so I don't know that I'd go to too much trouble to protect them. The season comes to an end, and the perennials don't seem to care if they get frosted. Most of your perennials, the blooms are pretty well shot anyway. There are some late-blooming things, such as the mums, the asters. Hostas have blooms coming out of them, depending on the varieties. But I wouldn't worry too much about the frost on those either. I don't know that I'd cover anything if it gets cold at this time of the year. In the spring, it's important because you got the whole spring and summer ahead of you. But this time of the year, it's going to happen eventually, so it just doesn't really much matter. And the annuals, you know, you want to get them cleaned up anyway. And the thing to do is once you dig those out of the ground and the ground is somewhat disrupted, it's a great time to plant bulbs. Hmm. So you plant your tulips, hyacinths, daffodils, crocus, those types of things in the ground. And don't wait until next spring when everybody's is blooming and come crying about, hey, I need some bulbs. Too late. You got to do it in late September, early October. Plant the bulbs for next year's flowers. And when you do that, the beauty of that is not only the beauty of the flowers, but when spring rolls around and you have nothing in your beds, you feel like you have to hurry and plant things. Mm. And then it forces you to plant annuals too early. If you planted the bulbs in the fall, then in the early spring you have tulips and hyacinths and daffodils blooming. Mm-hmm. You don't feel the rush to get in there and plant something. Mm-hmm. So while everyone else is rushing around too early in the season, you can just sit and have a cup of tea and relax and enjoy your bulb plants. Mm-hmm. So get those planted at this time of the year, and you can incorporate those in the ground with garden mums in the ground, which are perennial. And then also at any point when those bulbs do die out in the spring, you can replace them with pansies, which can tolerate frost. I don't know. To me, gardening isn't you plant something one time a year and then wait.
Yeah.
Till next year. You have to rotate. Mm. So when you put pansies in the ground, you almost need to think, hey, these are going to be good for 6-8 weeks. Then I got to plant something that's good for summer and hot weather, because pansies really hate hot weather.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
We have another caller on line one. Tia, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome. Tia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I wanted to ask you a question. We had, it's with tomatoes, we had yellow tomatoes, and they grew really well. However, and we tried to, you know, keep them watered because it was so dry,
right,
but not
right.
too much, I mean, because we didn't want to overwater them. But on, they came out, but you know where it, the tomato connects to the plant? It had these big, like, splits or gashes, and I wonder what causes that.
Gashes and splits in your tomato itself?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes too much watering can do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and, you know, when you have healthy plants and tomatoes, it almost makes me think that maybe there's too much watering going on. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, letting them stress between waterings is actually better for the production of the fruit. May not be better for the tomato plant, but it's better for the production of the fruit.
I noticed my red tomatoes, now they didn't do hardly anything this year. I mean, they just sort of, I don't know if it was the heat or what, because I had the, what is it, the cherry tomatoes?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do well at all.
Your cherry tomatoes didn't do well.
Mm-mm.
They're almost like no-brainers. It's like you
I
have
know.
Cherry tomatoes, you're going to have them. It's just all there is to it, usually more than you can possibly use.
Now, one thing that we haven't fertilized our garden, so maybe I should put some fertilize on it, do you think?
Well, at this time of the year, yeah. Yeah,
it
would be fine. It might not even be necessary, though, now that the season's almost over.
Yeah. Now, one other question I have is I have, like, a holly plant that has berries. I have two in big, you know, planters. And I noticed this year when it got really hot, the one almost got bare and the other one lost quite a few leaves. But I kept watering them, and now the leaves have come back, and they're still pretty well covered, but not like lush like they were.
Yeah.
Do you think those are going to come back?
I do. I think that they will come back. And the thing, the key to keeping these things alive through the winter, as I mentioned earlier in the program, is make sure that when winter gets here, they don't go into the winter weather on the dry side. So if you have to water them in October or November, even one time, and then we have rain, you'll be covered. But if we don't have any rain, if we'd have a drought fall, then you will want to water those things probably in early November to make sure that they go into wintertime on the damp side.
Okay.
And then as far as the foliage in that, usually you don't have to water hollies through the summer, but boy, if they get... Well, I have hollies in front of the shop, and I never watered them this entire year, ever.
Yeah.
And they look fine.
Yeah, these, I don't know. I had the same kind of holly plants a couple years ago, and the winter just, they died.
Mm-hmm. That's the key there with the moisture level. You want to make sure they go into wintertime. We used to have them... And every year they would freeze out and die. And then when we started planting flowers in the same area, we're watering the flowers, but not the holly. But the holly benefited from it, and they survived ever since. I've never replaced one for years.
Okay.
But until we started planting flowers around that area, those hollies would die each year because they have an overhang over them. It even blocks the rainwater from hitting them. So they were not happy until we started planting flowers around them.
Okay,
and
well,
now they survive all the time.
Well, I'll try that because I hate to see a plant die.
Right, right.
So, well, I thank you, and I enjoy listening to your programs.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Tim. We have just about 3 minutes left in today's show. And, Doug, I was wondering, as somebody who's kind of embarked on some gardening, and some of our new gardening listeners might be wondering, what basic supplies do you need to have with you to properly cover a plant to protect it from colder temperatures?
Well, what you don't want is plastic. You don't want to cover your plants with plastic. Anything that's made out of cloth would be good. It can be a cloth that's porous, mm-hmm. like a cheesecloth, that's lightweight. That's nice. But, you know, you can't really use shower curtains because they're plastic. And what happens is if the sun shines and you don't get that off right away, they can get extremely hot and burn plants. So that and some string, you might have to tie it down because, you know, a lot of times when you try to cover your plants in the spring or in the fall, the wind kicks up.
Mm.
And so in the spring, when we tell people to cover plants, we say, well, wait until 7:30, 8 o'clock. The wind usually dies down then, and you can get out there and cover them. But, you know, it just takes one little poof of a breeze, mm-hmm. and that cover's blown off. I saw that at the chain stores that one year. I talked about it on the radio show, and I even got up. And I got up early, like 6 o'clock, and drove around. I just was curious what they did about their plants that were out on the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove to a couple of those box stores. And one of them had covered their plants, which surprised me. I didn't think they did anything. But they had covered them. Mm-hmm. And the covers were mostly there. One cover had blown away. I went to another box store. And all of their covers had fallen off. But they did put covers on them.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised by that. I really didn't think they did anything like that. I mm-hmm. just thought they just let them freeze and get more.
Right.
But I'll give them credit for covering them. But yeah, it blew off because mm-hmm. that's what it does. So you know, you put it down. If it's a big enough piece, you can put concrete blocks on it or whatever. But I'll tell you, one year we had a windy night that was freezing cold,
mm-hmm.
and we laid plastic. Now. This wasn't on the plants. It was around. That's why we had plastic. But we had it down, and I took an entire, this was 100 foot long. I took an entire skid of mulch and laid it end for end on that plastic. And within an hour, it had flipped the mulch off of it.
Wow.
And was flapping in the wind. So there's just times where there isn't much you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But in the fall, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Any parting words for our listeners? We have just about 30 seconds left.
Well, one more,
mm-hmm.
and it's on the same topic. Burlap works well. You can mm-hmm. actually staple gun burlap to stakes, stake them on the west side of your plants. Mm-hmm. They don't even have to touch the plants, but it protects that wind all winter long. From wind.
Great.
So there you go.
Perfect. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. We're also streaming online at our new website, nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Thanks so much to all of our callers and listeners today. This episode of Midday Matters will be podcasted on our website, nipr.fm, by the end of the day. Sean Beter will be back next Thursday from noon to 1 for more Outer Spaces Midday Matters. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next. From WH.